Good morning, good morning, and welcome to Radio Economica. We have with us Elena Wisner-Malinowska from DG Klima. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for coming to Radio Economica and to present a very important initiative of the European Commission, which is the Climate Pact. Could you tell us a little bit what this pact is about? We're all aware, of course, that a year ago, the European Commission came up with the European Green Deal, one of the top priorities for the next years to come. It's a plan for a resilient economy based on the net zero greenhouse gas emissions and on an economic growth that is decoupled from resource use and pollution. This is very ambitious. And now you come up with a pact. What is the idea about having a climate pact? Can you explain, please?
Thank you very much. We have listened in last weeks to a very intensive negotiations among the European leaders about the net zero future, the climate neutrality. And listening to them, we all realize that, you know, it's not anymore a matter of government action or of regulations as to how we move to a very radical climate action, but it's a matter of all of us, citizens, but also commission officials in our everyday lives as professionals, but also as mothers, fathers, you know, sport associates, nature lovers. And so the Climate Pact is really a novel approach to how we do citizens' engagement. It's not about just, you know, selling our policies to citizens, but it's actually, you know, promoting grassroots actions and taking it back and replicating it and scaling it up. And here the pact is like offering a huge space where action meets with new ideas, where ideas can actually also meet with sponsors, with promoters like philanthropies, but even you know, the big pots of money we have in Europe, like cohesion policy or life program. It's a space where we need to raise awareness about climate action because we take it for granted, but there are out there many different audiences, starting with the converted ones, those that do take climate action into their personal life on a daily and continuous basis, going through what Executive Vice President calls a climate despairers. People who know that climate change happens, but they just don't want to deal with that during their lifetime. They are more or less indifferent or even feel there's not much to do. To climate deniers that are slowly on a retreat, and I would you know, call them, at least in Europe, slow to die part of the audience, hopefully, of course. And we want, you know, through the pact to reach to all of those communities, of course, starting working with those active, passionate, and impressed by the possibilities to work together. So last week's a launch event for the pact have seen the nomination of at least 180 people around Europe from different walks of life, to you know, promote in their communities action on climate, ranging from youngsters working for energy transition to people arranging city gardens in major capitals, till you know, real political activists present in EU elections. So a very wide range of audiences. And we hope that, you know, by this, we will give the trigger to really start changing the landscape. It's not anymore the matter of industries just to invest in technologies and make the organizational change. It's also a matter of society to start adopting this technological or organizational change and even pushing for it. And we have seen an EU-wide green wave already before the past European elections. And we hope to see it more and more, these democratic debates to happen. So the pact is there to provide also tools to those who feel unequipped on science or on action, but also those provide the stage, center stage to those who are already very active and who want to do pledges, going, of course, beyond the legal obligations. So in a short slogan, anybody contribute and no action is too small.
Now, this is what you call in the communication that came out very, very, very recently on the 9th of December, if I'm right?
Yes.
By the European Commission, you target behavior. Behavior, of course, which is collective as much as individual. I mean, how can you, this is very ambitious, of course, because you want actual changes in the way people, I don't know, heat their houses or drive or move around. But it's also it's collective as well as individual. How do you encompass these two dimensions? How do you, you're trying to target individuals, if I understand right, with this climate pact, but not only? And how do we change collective behavior? Because I may be interested in, being a different consumer, but maybe I find it difficult in my faraway place in the countryside to find, sustainable equipment or, and so on and so forth. How do you bridge this tremendously broad public, potential public?
Thank you. First of all, yes, we want to target individuals as much as communities, but we don't pretend that we can talk to every single citizen in Europe. And for that, we need a lot of intermediaries or multipliers or influencers. And they firstly come in the role of the EU Climate Pact ambassadors who can start structure and organize this space. Behavior. I think the Commission has been always very self-restrained when it came to, behavior and what we can do in terms of, better environmental attitudes and changing the mindsets. We always felt this is not the space where the Commission should dictate, also because we are trying to be humble ourselves, we see that We may not be doing well on all requests we went on to the citizens, but this is also changing and breaking. We have seen colleagues that are organizing for climate within the Commission. We have seen a lot of colleagues who promote EMA schemes, who cycle, who push really the Commission for better mobility, food, or even buildings choices. So we are over the stage of Commission being only, interested about regulations or policies. We are in a stage where you very much go for engagement. Now, how to go from the individual to a collective? We have defined areas where we see a lot of potential. You have mentioned, Catherine, buildings. You have mentioned also, products. We have definitely the green mobility, greening of spaces or green skills. And these are the areas where the pact wants to focus at the beginning, because indeed we have very different attitudes when it comes to buildings or heating solutions in Europe. For instance, you can see me sitting in a sweater because I'm here in a living room of 18 degrees, but I grew up in Central Europe in building where it was the 24 degrees was the norm, because energy was just so cheap. And this is how, you know, we are also developing and how we can influence how our kids will do. In the past, you would not have your plants outside, your carrots, unless you would be in a countryside, and you would be planting them in your garden. Nowadays, you see a lot of people having even beehives, you know, on their roofs. So there is a wave of change. And without saying that, without the youth movements, which were in streets since 2 years now, this would not happen, because the priority of the Green Deal would not be just put so high. So we want to continue the conversation youth has thrown, you know, into the debate. What is it, climate change? Why does it happen? You know, and debate the scientific facts, because we don't want to shift the situation here in Europe to where it was in the US, with a lot of denialists on the rise, and where, you know, you see the same attitudes then linked also to anti-COVID measures, etc. So debating will be very important, and this is already a very good start, and we think the atmosphere is ripe, and we are ready for that.
So you're trusting young people, and we've seen that already, to be advocates of climate change and the climate pact in particular. And I think we've seen that before. You mentioned COVID-19. This is, of course, a very recent experience. Did you find relevant lessons from that crisis under COVID? I mean, it's ongoing, of course. You referred to suspicion against vaccines. And what do you do? Okay, you mentioned young people. You mentioned scientific evidence, if I'm right, or experts. And you mentioned the fact that some people go out to the office, in other times, cycling, you also lead by example. I mean, have you changed your perception, or has anything changed because of COVID-19? Or has been the focus, has it been made easier because of that strange period we're going through?
This is a very complex question. So allow me first to say that I have seen a lot of parallelism between the doubters of, you know, the anti-COVID measures and the doubters of climate change. And it is, you know, you can find it in doubting the science, doubting the modeling, you know, not being transparent, not to trust international cooperation. I think, you know, the terms of climate change and COVID could be very interchangeable in many of the lessons or many of the root causes that we have seen. But this period, at least for me, was the best learning period we could get, because it was so disruptive in terms of, how we do business, and how rapidly we were able to adjust, by cutting the unnecessary emissions around the globe, and just going into digital and finding out that you can have the same, output, if you wish, and the same impact, talking in different conferences. We have seen that, you know, at least I can judge on here in Brussels, where I stayed during first lockdown, and where I am during the second lockdown, that, you know, people jumped quickly to personal mobility means, which is often a bicycle. Due to the closure of fitness, places, you see a lot of people, doing sports outdoors. So feeling what it is to have better or worse air quality. So people became a sort of sensors in a way of the outside environment. And it is a constraining factor. It is very disruptive. At the same time, we can see what does it mean in practice to be a little bit, let's say, more in tune with nature than we used to be before, and that there are many things we can just forego because it is impossible. And then to realize that this is actually also an attitude you can still cherish or continue the good attitudes, of course, once this time of closure or of confinement is over. So for me, it is really positive, and I'm very happy that we could bring a sort of positive undertaking at the end of the year, because we need it. We need positive projects coming out of the European Commission. Positive in the sense of creating social bonds between people. And me being also a scout, I know what it means when a community forms around a positive project, be it a planting of a forest, or a petition for not reopening to cars a park that you like and that was your place to be during the lockdown, etc., etc. So I think we were offering a unique opportunity during this time to test how we score and how we can actually survive in a completely different, constraining environment. Nevertheless, let's not fall into complacency. I hear many saying, okay, now the greenhouse gas emissions and, air pollutants have dropped, all is fine, we have worked for the nature, and now let's work for economy, let's work for people. I think we should bring all this together, because nowadays we will have a huge investment package coming, the way of member states. And because they need to, build a better future and take into account, requirements from the other generations, this should be a sort of greener recovery and a better economy that can work for both nature and people. So it's a nice continuation of, the experience, and now putting it really into investments for the future.
Now, to change a little bit and turn to tools briefly, the Climate Pact will be made instrumental, operational through a platform. And how do you see this platform, Pact will be a platform, is this meant to be a learning space? Is this meant to be an informational tool, a knowledge hub, as we call it, a co-creating instrument? And what will the role of experts be in this, what I believe you want to be a general dialogue and building a community of practice? What will be on that platform?
Thank you, Catherine. I would say that it's more than a platform, because platform often, makes allusion to purely IT and online exchanges. And I think we are already after COVID, we are fed up with that. So for us, the Pact really will use, online and offline tools really to make people meet and learn together. It will be a tremendous mutual learning space, but it will definitely be done in order to create some sort of climate movement. We have seen that one person can do already a lot. And if you get in every country several volunteers that are ready to talk about climate, to create networks of schools and to link to grassroots and back to politics, this is already a lot. The tools will be, of course, developed as we go. We need scientists in this space. We need experts in this space because many times you have multiple solutions at your fingerprints and you just need which one is the best. And we need also to burst these bubbles between the expert dialogue on climate change and non-expert. I think we need to bring more and more experts into these sort of popular, you know, everyday debates to explain us, you know, what to do, where to fetch the right facts and how not to be drowned by fake news or, you know, misled by some social media posts. So the pact is really, you know, there will be a meeting place for everybody who wants it, but we hope that this conversation can continue then on the existing, you know, social media or tools, etc. So people, one, they met, they e-met on a platform that they can continue the good conversation or forge a collaboration or cooperation elsewhere. We were impressed by the fact that in our webinars, when we discussed the, you know, solutions and narratives for climate pact, we had in our Zoom living group, we had a scout, an industrialist, a parent for the future. You had a representative of, for instance, renewables, energy, etc. So very a huge diversity of people from different angles coming to the same to actually to environment and to ecology, which was really reassuring. And also in our launch event last week, you could see a chef, a cuisine chef, you know, making pledge, football association, musicians, and others. So you do realize it's not just about the wind farms or solar panels or the usual suspects, as we call them, but it goes really beyond that. And the culture can be a nice, you know, instrument to relay also climate messages.
Thank you. Now, in the communication that I did read, the Commission says that there is a challenge in this fight against climate change, which is the fact that the impact is not equal on everybody, in particular on the fact that the poor and the vulnerable are hit harder. I mean, this is also part of how do you include, you just mentioned the a very good sense of the diversity of these exchanges in whatever format. But how will the Climate Pact attempt to address this issue of justice, democracy, and solidarity?
Thank you. First of all, I always dislike that climate policy has been presented as a divisive policy, that people like the miners in coal mine that were, you know, just doing what was necessary for their living were finger pointed as people who would be polluting our planet. We need to go back to, you know, dialogue and to conversations and not leaving anyone behind. And there again, I am very hopeful about the intergenerational talk that the Climate Pact can actually promote. I was recently to a conference on youth projects for just transition and was, for instance, very impressed by a conversion of a region of Idria in Slovenia, which used to be a mining of mercury region. and where young people took it into their hands in a very consultative and participatory approach and have built a new strategy, new sources of activity, of really business and cultural activity for the region. And I think this can happen everywhere, but it will not happen, you know, centrally from Brussels or even centrally from capitals in countries, but it can really happen through the what I call local patriots in these regions who take it into their hands and who are able to work on projects that really meet the necessary criteria for the Just Transition Fund or for Recovery Fund or for smaller funds. And this is where the Climate Pact can add the layer of engagement, of urgency, of a toolbox where to start and again be as a connector between the communities willing to change and the change. Of course, to be honest, we all need to act. You know, we live in Belgium and we know how sometimes, you know, difficult the debate between the different regions is and how unequal the distribution sometimes of wealth is here. We have the same picture everywhere in Europe. There are regions that are, you know, catching up, and we should avoid that they become in a permanent assistantship, relationship. And this is where they, you know, the emphasis on being active, on really having youth or having, you know, intergenerational contract in place for improving the environment around is very important, you know. And of course, we can help with all the artillery of toolbox and funds, but it starts with the willingness with, you know, to act and to do something different. So I'm hopeful, but I'm also expecting, you know, the regional representatives, you know, to take this up as they own a, you know, task and challenge.
Okay, so no hierarchy in the input. The mobilization of local patriots, as you mentioned, I think you're giving us a very good idea of the spirit of the entire pact. Thank you. Now, because time goes by so quickly, I'm sorry to say, a final question. We are in Radio Economica, it's a radio by DG Translation. And of course, this is a service which is very much concerned about diversity and multilingualism. Now, how do you believe you can embed, or can you turn translators into allies, certainly as professionals, people who understand what it is to talk to people, real people, in their normal language, I should say? I mean, how do you envision this collaboration with the translators in DG Translation and perhaps beyond?
Thank you. I think the pact will rely on very much on multilingualism, because despite English or, you know, being one of the most spoken languages in Europe, we should know that everyone is allowed to have access to information in their own language. And I have seen over these past years a tendency towards a very, you know, I would say, automatic translations, you know, where the source being in English or, you know, in another language, it does become very complicated for a native to understand where's the message, what's the core, what is the story. And I'm saying it because I come from a smaller language representative. I'm half Czech and half Slovak, and I many times do enjoy, you know, actually reading documents in my own language to just know, you know, where's the pitch and where's the emphasis. So for us, the translators and the interpreters, of course, will be important sculptors and artists for the pact, and rely on them to really even think with not only translation in mind, or but how, what would be the best term for a person, you know, to understand what we are up to? Because we need to reach not only, let's say, people in the capitals who may understand, but you know, widely areas that for the time being have been, you know, targeted by very specific means and specific tools, and this is where we would need, you know, well-equipped translators with whom we will really work hand in hand. The pact will not be able to have a wide reach without a very honest and creative translation at the same time. We were very proud in the climate launch event last week that we reach to, you know, smaller, bigger countries, to different communities. It was still very English spoken. It was with a few languages interpreted towards, you know, original language. But I hope we will be able to make this into a real multilingual undertaking.
And this is, of course, yeah, an important dimension of inclusiveness. Of course, you may find that the pact, after all, will be a sort of a avant-garde for the coming conference on the future of Europe, which is supposed to start next January. Do you have links constructed, or do you think there will be an interaction? That will be my last question, because time, we're running out of time, but still.
Of course, we hope there will be interaction, and I hope to learn a little bit more about what you know, conference of future will bring. But there may be no future, you know, conference of future without a debate about climate. That's a very real debate for the reasons I just outlined. So I think there must be these linkages, you know, built. We have construed the Climate Pact as something like a popular project, you know, people's project. I'm not sure whether the Conference of Europe is in the same vein, but I hope it is. I have participated or listened to the last big, you know, project of this kind, La Convention, that was still chaired by Mr. Giscard d'Estaing. And this was, I still remember I was a trainee in DG Sanko at the time in 2002. So I went, you know, to listen to the parliament for some debate. As a lawyer, it was very interesting, but it was an extremely technocratic project, I must say, very legal, political. So let's see what the Conference of Europe will bring, whether this will be a more closer to people project. And in that sense, you know, of course, then there is a very natural link between the pact and the Conference of Europe.
Thank you very much. We've come to the end very much of our session. This sounds very exciting, really, frankly, looking forward to 2021 with a different spirit. Thank you very much for this lively picture of what's coming. Thank you very much, Elena.
Thank you, Kathy. Goodbye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.